Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
This podcast is the result of my passion for languages and for talking to people. I have conversations with language professionals who are willing to share their experience. We focus on their work, but also on how their love for languages has shaped their personal lives. I started my career as a researcher in terminology, but I found my passion for working directly with clients when I lived in the United States and started working as a language consultant for global companies like Sony, Apple, and Google. When I came back to Europe, I was introduced to the world of LSPs, where I had multiple roles: project manager, vendor manager, and terminologist. Find out more on LinkedIn or Instagram and get in touch if you'd like to explore how I can help you with your project. I am Rita Prazeres Gonçalves, the language worker. This podcast is also available on YouTube. Hi, everybody. Good morning. We're recording in the morning. This is a Rita and Rita situation. We're neighbors. We're friends. We have a lot of interests in common. And today we decided to join forces and create this episode for you, focusing obviously on Rita and Rita's work. So sometimes I'll go between saying Rita and Rita. So that's, you know, because it's a strange thing. It's my name too. So it feels strange to always pronounce it in English. So I will go between one thing and the other, which is fine. But we'll hear Rita pronounce her name properly because she has a very beautiful name for Portuguese standards. So, which is not my case, trust me, but she does. So good morning. Thank you so much for being here. And I just want to ask you to just, you know, a super brief presentation, not even getting into the ins and outs of work yet, but just your name and just a super brief presentation. Rita Menezes.
Okay. Rita Menezes. Thank you, Rita, for inviting me. I might call you Rita instead of Rita, but yeah, so sorry about that. I work in the language industry for over 20 years now. My main specialty areas are subtitling and transcreation, and also marketing. And I've been translator's trainer. I'm also a translation studies researcher. That's it, and that's me.
That's not only it, but we'll go there in a minute. Okay, so when did this whole language thing started? So was it when you were already in college? Were you in school and you were like, oh my God, this is what I want to do? So when did you know, or when did you decide that languages were going to be your life?
In high school, I had a subject called English Translation Techniques.
Yep.
Which was a very basic subject, but it broadened my horizons. And I thought, well, this is fun. What if I do this for a living? And then I saw there were actually translation degrees, which I was not aware of. And I decided back then in high school that I wanted to do this.
Mm-hmm. So then when it was time to go to university, you were like, okay, I already know. Right?
No, it was a shock because it was immensely different. That's why I said it was a subject in high school, just a tiny sample of what translation might be. Back then, I thought that translation was only translating books. And then when I got to college, I realized that translating books was just a small portion of translation. And that's it. And then when I got to my degree, my horizons have broadened again. And I thought that, well, I might do something in these areas. I want to try everything. I want to try a bit of what every type of translation available, which I did. And then life channeled me to the creative areas I work on today.
So let's start with the finishing college part of things. What did you think? Did you think it was going to be super easy to get a job? Did you think about going to work at a company? Did you immediately thought that you would start working as a freelancer? Because it was not the most common path at the time, even for translators, I suppose. So what happened when you were about to be done with your degree?
When I was about to be done, I decided I wanted to do subtitling. But back then, more than 20 years ago, it was very difficult to work on subtitling outside Lisboa. And I decided that I had to move to Lisboa to work on subtitling, which I did.
Okay.
I went to Lisboa, our capital, and I worked at our state television provider.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
I had no idea.
I worked there. I work on the multimedia department. And at the same time, I started finding other jobs in subtitling. And I that's what I did. I looked for companies and I literally went there. Ding dong. Do you have work for me? Oh, okay. It happened like this. Okay. You have to do a test. I did the test and I passed, and that's how I got my first subtitling job. And as a freelancer.
So you started with Portuguese companies. If you were there in Lisbon, so you just went to their offices and talked to them. Yes. I'm sure some of them still exist, probably Sintagma and some of the most classic ones, I would
say. Sintagma is one of the most ancient right now. But actually, this company
was also around.
This particular company does not work, does not exist anymore.
Ah.
But that's okay. I had to look for a job, for work there. I had to move from my city to another city. And things were very... And why I had to do this? Because we used VHS tapes. We needed VCR recorders. We needed very expensive software that none of us could afford to buy. That's why we had to go there. I had to go to the company to insert, to time the subtitlers, to do the timings. I could not do that at home. So it was difficult to get a job on subtitling back then.
Well, I had never thought about this VHS thing. Even if I did a few jobs like that, especially transcription, things like that, I still did that. I remember the courier coming to my house in Los Angeles and bringing me a VHS, and I had to look for a VCR because they were no longer around because it was 2006, I think. So I had to go and get one, but it was hard to find.
This was before that. This was in 2003. That's when I started.
Wow.
Back then.
So you started working for our TV channel, and how long were you there for?
A year and a half. Then I decided that I had enough of Lisbon, and moved back to Leiria.
But how was the job? Did you enjoy the job? Did you...
My job at the television channel, yes. It was... It had nothing to do with translation. But it was really interesting, and I had a nice experience working with so many people in the same department. I really enjoyed it, but I missed my town, and
so you came back.
the hustle of a big city is not for me. Back then, I moved back, and I had a kind of agreement with another company, and I could bring the tapes with me, and then I went to Lisbon once or twice a week to do the actual.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Subtitling. And from there, there were other clients. My first international client came in 2004. Yeah, 2004.
But that one wasn't with tapes anymore, was it? Still?
No, not tapes anymore. Videos, which I had to download. Mm-hmm. Back then, again, internet was very expensive. I had a huge amount, a huge bill every month because I downloaded a lot of films.
Yep.
But I had to, so it was part of the job. That's when the DVDs were in high demand when I started working with international clients.
Mm-hmm. How DVDs was that experience?
And then Blu-rays.
Mm-hmm. How was this experience different from working on site with Portuguese clients?
Well, digital is easier to, I would say, to manipulate. It's not to manipulate. It's easier to work with the digital than with the VHS, of course. You only need your computer and the software.
Mm-hmm. But the subtitles weren't integrated in the movie, right? There was no software.
No, no. No, no, no. Then, of course, the payment was very different. International clients always tended to pay more than national clients, at least for Portuguese. And it was easy to decide which way to go back then.
Yeah. So then when did you start working in other types of translation? Because you have started working and you did your master's in marketing and all that stuff.
Yes.
When did that happen? Was it close to that time or was it much later?
To finish my degree, I had to do an internship, and I translated a book back then in my internship.
What was it about?
It was a book about European Union.
Oh.
How it started and how it goes.
So not a fiction book, but
not a fiction book. No.
More technical or historical or?
Yeah, both technical and historical, yes. Mm. Very difficult and very fun to translate. Then, along with my subtitling clients, here and there, I was contacted by other clients, from the technical area. And I tried, of course, I did technical translation. And then things, you see that there's one thing that I value, which is word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I was tend to say to my students, do not undervaluate your project managers, because if you leave a good impression, they might contact you later on, even if they move companies. And this happened to me a lot. So my first contact with marketing was in one of these cases. A former project manager in a company that I worked for moved companies, and in that new company they were specialized in marketing, and I was back then I started translating questionnaires and surveys. And from there I went to transcreation, marketing campaigns, advertisement, and I decided, okay, I have been practicing, but I think I need to learn more about this, what I'm doing. That's when I decided to do the master's in relationship marketing. And that's how I got my specialization in marketing. From the work that came my way, and also from the training that I did after that.
So when did you create the company?
I created the company during my marketing master's degree in 2015. Because back then I thought I knew everything about marketing, everything I had to know, I knew, I thought. And I decided to create a company, create the brand, create everything that I could back then. And also I created the company because it has revealed more profitable for me than being a freelancer. So both things combined, the in terms of the financial my financial situation, and also my visibility desires, you can call it that way.
But something else happened. She's like, I don't know what she's talking about.
What else happened?
I'm talking about when you started teaching at the university.
It was at the same time also.
That's what I thought. That's what I thought in chronological terms. That would be sort of the time.
Yes, in 2014, I was starting writing my master dissertation. I had the baby and I started teaching. It was all in the same year. And yes, I started teaching at the Polytechnic University in Leiria. Translation, well, technical translation, multimodal translation, and translation theory to Portuguese and Chinese future translators and interpreters.
What do you mean Chinese? Why
the
Chinese?
The degree is in Portuguese Chinese. That's where I started.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't speak the language.
No, of course, because you were the translation teacher, not the Chinese teacher.
Yeah. Yes.
So how was that experience?
It was a very fulfilling experience because I finally had the chance to teach what I knew and to give back what I've been receiving for all those years with my teachers and my colleagues and my experiences. So it was my time to give back to the community of translators, to pass on my knowledge. It was great. It was indeed.
So in terms of work, what happened after all this explosion of having babies, creating companies, doing marketing masters, and being a university teacher all at the same time? What was happening in the work front?
In the work fronts, work never stopped. We have to live, right? Work never stopped, and I tried to juggle everything the best way I could. I think I actually did a great job. I thought it was so great that I decided that after my master's degree, I had to continue. And then I enrolled in a PhD. And the craziness went on with the PhD.
So what about the research? Did you immediately start researching for your specific dissertation for the PhD, or did you do other research work before that? Or in parallel with that?
No. In my PhD, we had mandatory seminars and we had the optional seminars. And in all my seminars, I decided that I want to do research that had to do with my main research interest, which was subtitling and revision. And all my works and all my research that I had to do related to those seminars had something to do with either subtitling or revision or both. So I started channeling my interests and my strengths, my efforts, yes, and my strengths to that interest.
So when you decided on your dissertation title and theme and all of that, what was the process? Did you already know what you wanted to go for because of your experience, or did you have to like look for subjects that were more focused on something?
Before enrolling in my PhD, those last couple of years, I have been doing a lot of subtitling revision and quality control. And I decided that I needed to learn more about it. And when I went to look for something, for papers, for books, whatever I could get, I found that there was only one paper on quality control and subtitling revision back then. And I thought, this can't be. I need to learn more about this, and what can I do? Perhaps I could research this topic. Perhaps it would be useful not only for me, but for everyone who works in subtitling and quality control and revision and whatever. And when I did the application to the PhD, I had to write a motivation letter. And in that letter, I already mentioned that I wanted to research subtitling and revision somehow, because I found a research gap and I wanted to bridge that gap somehow. And I think I did.
So what is this dissertation about?
This dissertation is about revisors. Who are they? What they do, how they do it, and why, what is behind their decisions, why they decide to act in a certain way when they face a certain type of text. And I did an experiment for my PhD, and I tested several models of analysis of their interventions. My main research output, I would say, it's analytical typology, which tries to analyze what are the motive, how they intervene in a text, what motivates them to intervene in a text, and whether they privileged more the text itself, the words, or the timing in subtitling, or both. And I was able to trace their activities with a specific methodology I used, and then I reported on their activities, on their motivations, and on And then I did a quantitative analysis on the type of interventions they did. And
did you tell me that you had access to their thought process? Because were they recording their thinking?
Yes,
or what was
yes. In terms of methodology, I used questionnaires, and I also used think aloud protocols to record their thoughts. I used a screen recording to see what they do. And I used a corpus analysis to analyze the text, to compare the translated file with the revised file, and then analyze the changes. And then I put together all these methodologies. That's why my research is as a mixed methods approach. I combine all these methodologies and these data collection methods, analyze them all with different types of analysis, and came to some conclusions.
Some of the most interesting conclusions would be
that revisers have different types of orientations while revising, meaning that some of them tend to be more client-oriented, some are more audience-oriented, and some are more reviser-oriented, meaning oriented to themselves.
So when you say that, so when you say client, let's clarify that to understand what that could mean, right? Okay. When you feel or when you see, when you have evidence that they are client oriented, how do you see that?
They tend to value client guidelines and client brief above everything, meaning that they tend to fulfill everything that client asks, irrespective of that being a prejudice or not for themselves and for the audience. For example, if a client asks you to be very specific in terms of in and out times, some revisers are actually very specific and amend everything that has to be amended in terms of timing, even though that would translate in a more effort for them and a more time-consuming task that sometimes is not paid well. When we equate the effort the reviser puts in the task and the output of that task.
So then the audience, what is the consequence in audience experience?
The consequence in audience experience. Sometimes let me tell you that, tell you about a specific case, like, for example, timing subtitles to short changes. For example, there's a difference of one or two frames, and the reviser, to comply with client guidelines, amends all those instances where there's one or two frames, a delay or something like that. Sometimes the audience might not notice. So it would be okay to leave those.
Right. I see.
But okay. So it depends on the file. It depends on each case, for example, because if it starts with a short change, you cannot start a subtitle before the short change. So in that particular case, you need to be very specific. But sometimes you don't. In other cases. So sometimes my conclusion was that even though you want to perform exactly as your client wants and pays you to, which is okay and correct to do, that means the effort that is not paid, that is not compensated for the in terms of audience benefit and revisor's benefit.
I see. Makes sense. So when you feel that the revisor is more audience oriented is when they kind of...
When they kind of, for example, irrespective of guidelines, they try to produce a text that is the they believe is the best possible text for the audience. For example, in terms of reading speed, they tend to make adjustments or make amends that make sure the viewing speed of the subtitle is comfortable enough for the audience to read and comprehend the message without impair their viewing experience. For example, I found a case that where a revisor in this experiment, there were several subtitles with high reading speed. This particular revisor decided that there would be no subtitle with high reading speed, and they make sure that everything was okay in terms of timing, but without care too much about the one or two frames between the subtitles or adjusting in and out times. And then there was a group of revisors who tried to be more efficient, meaning they tried to be very fast in their process, amending what were blatant errors and also minor errors, but for example, not amending those one or two frames where needed. So they decided to privilege their effort and try to balance what they give in terms of effort, revising effort, and try to balance that with what they would receive in terms of compensation for their effort. So to sum up, this means that efficacy being effective is not the same as being efficient. Sometimes you are efficient, meaning that you do what we have to do, that is amending errors, but you are not you are effective, but you are not efficient. For example, if you take too long to do that. In subtitling revision, we need to look for a balance between efficiency and efficacy, which is not easy to get, but it's the only way to proceed if you want to keep including revision in this workflow, in the subtitling workflow.
And I guess there's no way around that, I suppose, or it shouldn't be that way.
There are things that could be done to improve efficiency. For example, if the rates would raise,
they would take more time with the time consuming tasks.
Yes. Oh. That's it.
We had a frozen pain.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Oh, that makes sense, right? So it's a huge
motivated
problem.
Motivated professionals with fair rates can produce better results. And that's true not only for subtitling revision, but for everything in life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your PhD was just presented to the world, I guess, on the 22nd of January. I think that's the
yes,
date.
Yes, that's right.
So it's a brand new thing, right? So have you had the time to think about what your career is going to look like from now on? Are you already thinking about new types of research? Because I know you're very interested in research. Are you thinking about, you know, spending this year being more out there, putting your work in the world? So what's the plan for this post-PhD era?
Mm-hmm. So the plan is keep working. Above all, I'm a translator. Translator, linguist, whatever you want to call me, because I'm not only a translator, I also transcreate, I revise, I post-edit, I do consultancy,
you name it. I teach.
You name it. So I will... I intend to keep working on translation or on linguistic jobs. And also I want to keep researching, and probably my next research will have to do with technology. Because, as I mentioned, I researched subtitling revision. Mm-hmm. I did not research post-editing. Even though there are similarities, they are not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be interesting to go there to post-editing.
Mm-hmm.
And then another of my research interests besides technology is creativity. I had the chance to research a bit of creativity in my master's degree. And so probably I will combine both somehow. I'm not sure yet. But right now, I'm trying to do something more with my thesis. I'll try to present the results in a couple of conferences this mm-hmm. year. And that's it. There's no rush. The worst part is done, which was the PhD. The worst are the best. So sorry.
Yeah, yeah, I know how it goes. Yeah, it's a fine. Yeah. It's fine. We all have our black cats.
Yes. And so I'll take things slowly, with no rush, and having fun. Having fun above all, because discussing these issues is very... It's great. It's great. I love to discuss these issues with anyone who wants to hear me.
So, which will happen in May, I think you're one of the people who's going to be speaking. A lot of my friends are speaking there, so I'm considering going because I have lots of friends there. So you're going to be presenting at the APTRAD, which is, what is it? The Portuguese Translators.
Portuguese Translators, one of the Portuguese Translators Association. Mm-hmm. Yes, the event is Translate Porto. Mm-hmm. It's in May. And I'll be presenting a paper on transcreation and artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm. So no subtitling this time, or at least not the focus.
No, not subtitling.
Mm-hmm.
Not subtitling this time, but transcreation is one of my expertise areas.
Mm-hmm.
So I will not fall far from the tree.
Mm. From your own tree. So you're also a mentor, right, at APTRAD?
Yes.
Or you are.
I am recently, that's a very recent thing,
mm-hmm.
A mentor at APTRAD. I cannot say I am a mentor because I do not have any mentee yet, but...
But you're expecting them to come soon and you're ready for them.
If they want to, yes, I'm here. Go on.
Okay, everybody. So... You members of APTRAD, if you, yeah. you know, Rita is available to be your mentor with their blessing, right? Yeah. So, yeah, so great. So, I mean, of course, we're friends, so I kind of knew most of these things. I didn't know the things from the beginning, but it's always very nice to hear it. And I think that everybody should know about your dissertation because it's something very original from what I've known. It's not something that people write about all the time. There's probably a lot of research in translation, but not necessarily in subtitling. So I've never heard of many of those. So I thought it was really interesting that everybody would know that you had recently done that, and we cannot wait to hear all those papers, some of them hopefully in English, so that everybody can, so that everybody
yes
can.
that's the plan yeah. some of them will be in English.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is it for now, but we'll keep on, you know, talking and discussing these things that are really interesting for us, and I will see you around. Thank you so much for this, and good luck for the rest of the year.
Thank you for having me, Rita. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Beijinhos.
Bye-bye.